welcome to the last episode of Amen Podcast in this year. Today, I'm very happy to introduce you to our guest, Arber. He's one of the founders of Balkanism, a very interesting Instagram profile that posts on everything related to Balkan. So hello, Arber, welcome.
Hello, thank you so much for having me, Vana. It's really great to be on your podcast today.
Thank you. First of all, how are you?
I'm good, yeah. You know, there's talk about the UK going into lockdown due to the new variant of Omicron. So it's been kind of like troubling. But other than that, I'm relatively okay. Yeah.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. Here is like it's finishing working hours. So a little bit tired, but still okay. Okay. So tell us a little bit more on Balkanism. How did the idea develop? And when did it develop, actually?
So I guess being a child of the diaspora, I've always been quite obsessed about the Balkan region. I was born and raised in London, but my family, we'd go back to Kosovo for summer holiday. And I have a lot of family in different countries surrounding Kosovo as well. So Albania and Macedonia, Montenegro and Turkey. So we would visit a lot of the region. And I was always quite obsessed with the cultures and, you know, the different identities that existed within the Balkans as a whole. But I guess a major reason, well, the idea was conceived when I started university. I started learning about the Balkans in an academic way. And I remember we learned about obviously the concept of Balkanism, which is an academic term that was coined by the Bulgarian academic Maria Todorova. And she spoke about the negative perception that the world has of the Balkans. And I remember just simply writing Balkanism on my book. And it was just kind of like an idea that I had, that kind of like just kind of like that eureka moment in my mind of like, maybe I should make a platform to kind of revoke the idea that the Balkans is kind of like overtly negative, or, you know, that we all hate each other, that we all, you know, are quite, what's the word?
Is it the term actually meant, and it still means the separation of the countries? So yeah. This Balkanism term, or Balkanization, I think it's used as to describe the separation of countries, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's always been used in somewhat of a negative way to denote negativity. And so it's almost like I wanted to use this word as a way to reclaim it and reclaim the Balkans and reclaim our identities, especially because growing up in the Western world, like I said, the perception of the Balkans has always been overtly negative. And as somebody growing up in, you know, the age of social media, I would often go on social media looking for these platforms that presented the Balkans in a positive way. And I often couldn't find them. And so that's something that really kind of provided that inspiration within me to start the page myself. As I said, I was studying Balkan history at the time. I wanted to make sure that I had that kind of background knowledge before I started a page like this, just simply because there, you know, Balkan history is a very complex thing to kind of engage with, especially with recent history, you know, with the former Yugoslavia, etc. And so I wanted to make sure that I kind of like covered all bases. And so, yeah, that was really the main reason why Balkanism was made, was due to lack of representation that I feel like a lot of Balkan diaspora people specifically have had to deal with growing up in the West.
And what do you post for the listeners who haven't seen your profile yet? Like, how do you choose what to post? Where do you find the ideas for the post?
Well, my ideas have always kind of like come out very organically. Like, as my parents have always been a great source of inspiration for me. My parents were so integral into like the way that I approached the Balkan region. They would often kind of like, oral history was a big part of my life and a big part of my family. So I grew up with kind of like mythical, whether it was kind of like Albanian mythological stories, or whether it was the accounts of my parents during, you know, socialist Yugoslavia. And so things like that, my parents have played a big role in the way that I create content and the way that I approach the Balkans as a region. But just generally, I feel like the internet is a great source of finding a lot of content and a lot of resources. So what I wanted Balkanism to be, I wanted it to be able to focus on all aspects of Balkan identity. So not just kind of like Balkan history, but Balkan, you know, Balkan culture and Balkan, you know, folklore and Balkan mythology, and also present issues that pertain to the region, so more contemporary issues, because I wanted it to be kind of very fleshed out and kind of like fully encompassing, not just kind of focusing on a specific aspect, because obviously the Balkans is such a diverse region, and so I wanted to represent that diversity and that complexity as well.
Are you still working alone, or you have a group of people behind you?
Yeah, well, now, initially when I created the page, it was completely by myself. I started the page in 2020, just simply because we were in lockdown in London and I had so much free time. So I thought, let me create this page. But as it's developed, we have developed like an ethos as a page, and our ethos is obviously inclusion and diversity. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, our team is also representative of the Balkans. So in August of this year, I decided to put out a call for Balkanism ambassadors. And so what Balkanism ambassadors do, they're basically content creators for the page. And what we wanted to do is make sure that every country was represented in the region. So we've got Romanian ambassadors, Serbian ambassadors, Bosniak ambassadors, people from Montenegro, Albania, Greece, kind of like every country in the region. And so, yeah, they're basically content creators. So right now, obviously, I'm the founder of the page and I manage the page most of the time. But we do have Balkanism ambassadors as well that are, you know, great contributors to the platform as well.
Yeah, that's great, because actually they can give another perspectives from their own countries or places where they live. How many of the ambassadors there are currently?
Around 15. We've got around 15 ambassadors. I am looking to expand as well, just simply to make sure that we're covering all bases. We don't have a Romani ambassador. That's something that I really want and I think is really necessary to be a part of the group. So yeah, we've got 14 right now. We had over like 80 applications, so it was very difficult for me to kind of reduce it to like 14, just simply because I'm one person and I don't feel like I have the ability to like manage a team that large. So yeah, just managing this team initially was just really kind of like great experience for myself. But also it's been a really positive process. All the Balkanism ambassadors feel, you know, very comfortable with one another. You know, it's so amazing just seeing people from, you know, all different cultures in the Balkans resonate with one another in such a positive way.
Yeah, that sounds very nice. And you mentioned that Romania, as one of the countries involved. Mm-hmm. So actually, because there is a lot of polemic, what is considered by Balkan, how many countries are involved. Mm-hmm. What do you consider as Balkan? Which countries?
Yeah, it's definitely kind of like a polarizing conversation that people have. For me personally, I feel like we need to be able to broaden what Balkan means, because I feel like sometimes historically the term Balkan has been used kind of predominantly for people who come from former Yugoslav regions. So people who are Serbian, Croatian, Bosnian, etc., they kind of identify with Balkan. However, for me, I feel like the term is much broader than that, just simply because within our region, whether it be, you know, Greece to the south, whether it be Turkey, whether it be Romania, these are regions that definitely have the cultural influence that we have as well. You know, when we look at, you know, certain traditions in Romania, certain traditions in Turkey or Greece, in terms of their food, in terms of their mentality, in terms of, you know, cultural aspects, they very much kind of align with individuals who come from the Western Balkans, so those who are considered traditionally Balkan. So I feel like we need to broaden the term. And it's almost like I see on social media sometimes people get into like fights and arguments over I'm more Balkan than you, and it becomes this kind of like tit for tat game. But I feel like we need to just understand that our perceptions of what Balkan mean are also very different considering about where we're from. For me, as somebody who's from Kosovo, as somebody who comes from an Albanian and Muslim background, when I think, you know, Balkan, my association is going to Kosovo as a child and hearing, you know, the azan from the mosque and having that experience, or going for Eid and Bayram, for example. So my association with the Balkans is kind of like takes more of a Albanian and obviously Muslim approach, whereas for other people who may be, for example, Serbian Orthodox or Greek Orthodox or Catholic, their approach to being Balkan is much more kind of related to their Christian identity or their, you know, their Slavic identity. And I think that's okay. It's okay to have differing identities in one area, because although we do have a lot of culture that kind of connects us all. We also have our differences, and I think that's all right, you know?
Yeah, and exactly those differences are need to be nurtured and somehow put in front like a good thing and not a bad thing, as it was, let's say, throughout the history. These differences were actually the causes of many war and conflicts.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so how is the audience? Because, I mean, your primary audience is in England, right? Mm-hmm. So how are the reactions? And I can see you have a lot of followers, having in mind that you started only 1 year ago. Mm-hmm. So how was this creation of your audience developed, and what were the reactions?
In terms of the reactions, it's been a very diverse set of reactions from people. I think that a lot of people have often craved to see a platform like Balkanism exist. So a lot of people just are like so happy that there's a platform that is speaking about these issues in a way that is not bad intentioned. Like, my intentions have never been negative. Like, I don't seek to offend anyone. I don't seek to kind of cause or inflict conflict in the region or create kind of like a social media kind of like conflict, because that's just not my intention. And it's not the intention of Balkanism ambassadors either. So the response from certain people has always been quite positive in that way. You know, people see it as kind of like a breath of fresh air. However, obviously there are those that just kind of like don't want to engage with the platform, believe that, you know, we have like these ulterior motives that are dedicated at kind of like inflicting some kind of conflict, or they're just kind of like nationalists that can't actually engage in history in kind of in a bit more of a nuanced way, and in a way that is actually fully fleshed out and historically accurate. So we've got that. And in terms of how we kind of developed the platform, initially we had like 300 or 400 followers. What really kind of changed the page was a post that I did about Kosovo. It was a post that said, put Kosovo on the map. And so the post basically went viral. It was reposted by many kind of internationally known individuals. And so, yeah, that's really kind of the event that that brought us our following. But since then, we've gained more followers from then. Initially, we gained like 10,000 followers in like 2 days. It was a pretty crazy time. But since then, all of the followers that we've accumulated, I feel, has been through the content that we've been putting out. You know, consistent content, engaging content, content that actually strives for transitional justice and proper, like I said, fully fleshed out conversations, not kind of like not just had in a kind of one sided way, I'd say.
And what would you say were the main challenges, or still are?
Main challenges. There are many challenges that come with this platform. I think first and foremost, people are quite entitled. They're entitled. They feel they are entitled to your time. They feel that they are entitled to your energy and to your response as well. You know, this is something that us as ambassadors and us as Balkanism, we are doing completely free. We're not sponsored. We don't get paid. All of this content that we're doing is coming out of our own time. And sometimes I feel like people approach us in a way that they see us as like an organization where we have to speak about a certain issue or post about a certain topic. And of course, we do strive to make sure that we're representing everybody, but sometimes, you know, we may be busy or we might not have time. And sometimes we can't reach, you know, the ability to make a post about a certain topic. And I feel like sometimes people can be really entitled and they don't understand, you know, they don't have that kind of like basic human level of understanding that we are also human beings. This isn't like a search engine that we're just kind of producing content. We're human beings behind this. And also a challenge has been nationalists. You know, a big challenge has been kind of people misinterpreting what we're saying, people actively trying to defame us and like consistently kind of manipulate our intention or manipulate our approach in order to fit their narrative of what they think we are or what they think we're trying to do. I'd say that those have been two of the most difficult or the challenges that we've had.
And you mentioned your time involved in this, since it's basically voluntary, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's not profitable. How much time do you actually have for for this platform, and what you do when you're not working on Balkanism?
So what I do, so currently I'm working in a museum in London. Not going to say where it is, just simply for, you know, I'm working in a museum. I do a lot of kind of like humanitarian work as well with like various, a variety of different human rights organizations in the UK. I'm also studying my master's. It's kind of like it's a very interdisciplinary master's, and it's focusing on history, anthropology, and sociology. So it takes that kind of interdisciplinary approach. So yeah, I'm working. I'm a part of a variety of organizations, and I'm also studying as well. So yeah, it's a very, very packed life that I have. But
full agenda.
Yeah, exactly.
But do you have time to come to Balkan?
Yeah,
they're traveling often here.
Hopefully, well, I'm aiming to take like 2 months off work, and I want to come to the Balkans and I want to do a whole tour. I'm also currently learning Serbian as well through my university. So I want to be able to, you know, go to certain regions and speak the language and travel around the region and meet so many people as well, because all of the ambassadors are from different countries. So now that it's almost like I've made a friend in every single country, you know, I'm able to go all over. And
when was your last time since you've been to Balkan?
Maybe 3 or 4 years, I'd say. Yeah, I think so. The last time I went to Macedonia, and then before then it was like my sister's wedding, like maybe 5 years ago. So I think, yeah, 3 or 4 years, it's been quite a while for me, but yeah, I'm really missing the region.
And what are your thoughts on regional cooperation? How, from your perspective, let's say from a more objective perspective, since you're not living here, what do you think about it? Is it going better or worse?
I wouldn't say it's getting better. I feel like, especially post the Yugoslav wars, just speaking from a perspective of, as somebody who comes from Kosovo, I think that there hasn't been a proper desire from any government in the region to actually have transitional justice. It's just this consistent tit for tat game that people want to have, you know, like these political games of, I did this to you, you did this to me, and nobody wants to take accountability. And I think that's mainly due to the way that the West, for example, engaged with the Balkans, you know, post the Yugoslav wars. There wasn't a proper due process. Like, for example, after the Second World War, you had a proper due process of people taking accountability. There was this whole kind of like judicial system of making people take accountability. Whereas after the Yugoslav wars, I don't really think that happened. There wasn't that process of making sure that nationalism was taken away from the system. It still very much exists. So yeah, it can be quite, what's the word? It can be quite saddening to see the fact that people still have very problematic mentalities that resulted in disgustingly problematic conflicts that happened in the 90s, whether it be in Bosnia or Croatia or Kosovo. And so we need to be able to actually move past these and actually fully address these issues in order to move on in a positive way.
And there was a creation of Hague Tribunal for this, I also think it's not sufficient.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And this is something that is lacking in every country that went through war. Mm-hmm. Okay, and my last question for you would be, what is Balkan for you?
What is Balkan for me? It's a great question, but not one that can be answered like in just like a singular way. For me, Balkan is your identity. It's not just a singular kind of like experience. It's multiple experiences. It's family. It's community. It's food. It's music. It's so many things. It can be anything you want it to be, really. And I think for me, the Balkans, like I said, I spoke about my parents, my parents have always been such an important part in the way that I've engaged with the Balkans, because they grew up in, you know, the 70s and 80s. And I grew up about, you know, their stories of having really positive relationships with different ethnicities that lived in Pristina during that time. For example, my mother would tell me about how, you know, she had a Serbian neighbor, they would call her Tetka Meleva, and she'd come over, you know, for Easter and give them, you know, painted Easter eggs, and how my mother's family would give them baklava during Bayram. And these stories were really kind of, were really pivotal in the way that I approached the Balkan region. So whenever, for example, in London, whenever I meet somebody from the region, there's almost like that connection that I feel like I have with them. And obviously, if they're a nationalist, I don't want to speak to them, but usually it tends to be quite positive. And so, yeah, Balkan for me is such a, it's a very complex identity. It's not something that's relatively easy. And for me, it's been quite difficult kind of engaging with what Balkan means for me historically. But I feel like I've reached a point where I'm finding my tribe amongst the Balkans in a way. Like I'm finding people who are like-minded, who seek transitional justice, who seek, you know, more, who seek, you know, the establishments of proper human rights in the region. And so, yeah, Balkan is so much more than just kind of one word can really describe.
Yeah, you described it pretty well.
Thank you.
I would agree on many things with you. Okay, thank you, Arbor, so much. This was a very interesting conversation. I hope that you will give me a call and to Hartefak that we can meet next time you come to Serbia.
Of course.
And this is an invitation at the same time. Thank you very much for this conversation. I will leave a link to the Instagram profile of Balkanism on this podcast episode. And I wish you all the best with your platform.
Thank you so much.